Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Tim Singer. Known for his work with bands such as Kiss It Goodbye and Dead Guy, his other band, Bitter Branches, recently issued the album Let's Give the Land Back to the Animals via the Equal Vision label. Speaking from his home in Philadelphia, Singer discussed his approach to writing lyrics and the responsibilities he feels as a vocalist and lyricist, why it's important to believe in what one's singing about, and how Generation X failed to take over the world. That's Tim Singer discussing Bitter Branches and more on this episode of Into Music, coming up now. It's good to be talking to you about this new album. And my understanding is that this one was, you had a little bit more time like for the writing and to think about everything this time out?
For sure. It wasn't baked in. I was just spread so thin. It's like Bitter Branches was around before Dead Guy got back together. And then I was juggling both. And then Dead Guy became way more active than I think I knew it was going to be. We were all pleasantly surprised by that. But then I'm like, but then I love Bitter Branches, and it's like, that's my local band in a weird way, because nobody in Dead Guy lives near me. So, and they, I feel like the sounds are different enough. So, but Bitter Branches, I had to be like, I'd like call uncle and like sat on those songs for like a year, but played them all the time. Like I was there for the writing of them and everything else. And then when it came to the vocals, I was just spread so thin. I was like, I don't think I'll do it justice right now, because I've gone into the studio before when I wasn't ready for vocals, and then just like, I hate giving myself a B, you know, like when you want to give some, like, and these guys were kicking ass on this record, I thought, right? I really thought the addition of Dan Yeaman, we really locked in on something, right? It just took us down a new fork in the road. So, and I think it benefited though, because I had a year to like let those songs just sit. And this is like, this is how I got started with Dead Guy too. I would just walk around town with the songs in shitty headphones and just memorize these crazy songs just so I didn't have to think about it when I'm in the studio and I can sort of hop around and find my spaces. So I think it benefited from that kind of extra year I took.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. Yeah. So it's a, you know, when you're talking about that headphone process and just kind of absorbing the music, I think of like other people who have said, you know, like, I don't want to think about the music. I just want to have it there and be able to sing or play. And that sounds like where you come from.
Yeah, for sure. I like to go to virtually every practice just for that. And it's funny because like, you know, I came up hanging around bands, and a lot of times you hang out with a band and the singer is almost never there, or you even go watch them record and the singer is never there. And I like to be there to sort of understand the construction of the songs, and even to be like, hey, you know, what if you put this here, or I have this idea for here that I could riff on, right? And this song feels like it's going to be about this or whatever. So, I like that. I love the whole process of songwriting. And then I love to get into the studio. It's just, it's more like a cheat sheet. Like I don't write down chorus, verse, you know, whatever. I don't even know how to do that. I just have my sort of cheat sheet of like, here's what I want to say in the song. Sometimes I get to the end of the sheet of my words, and sometimes I get halfway through. Sometimes I get to the bottom and I have to like wing it, you know, and like, and I wing it anyway. Like I end up, to me, it's like I lock in on what a song is about and then I let the shit come, you know? So it's like, it's still being written when I'm in the studio. It seems to work for me. I try not to do too many takes and drive the people crazy with like, here's 13 vocal tracks. Good luck with that. So I've gotten a little better about that. But yeah, so you know, Bitter Branches, I feel like we all locked in. Everybody was sort of in their lane of like playing with their instrument and their, I don't know, everybody had, I feel like everybody's really crafting something. It was kind of cool.
You mentioned going to the practices and hearing things and thinking maybe about subject matter. Is that like you hear something and you're like, okay, this, I don't know, this should be about.
I'll pick up on a tempo or even how it, if it starts off moody with bass, it might make me think of something over here. So for me, within my sphere of rage, there are lanes where I see the nuance. You know, this one's more like crestfallen and sad. This one's more like pick yourself back up. This one's more fuck that guy. This is my view of the world. I don't have a really rosy view of the world when you really just get inside my head. When you're not talking about my friends and family, I don't have a whole lot of, I don't feel a whole lot of positivity. But I try to be a happy warrior, right? So it's like, it's that balance. But anyway, yeah, so I feel like, yeah, songs have moods. But I'll kick the tires and I will switch things around. It might be like, I thought this fit. And I don't know. I think that's probably how most people do it. I definitely never have, here's a song from beginning to end. And I'm going to try to fit it into this piece of music they wrote. You know, that's never, I'm always at the end going, okay, now I got to like basically transcribe this song and figure out like what made the cut and what didn't. Because like, you know, with the Bitter Branches record, there was a couple of takes for like Pity Party where I said different things. And sometimes it's a tough choice. Right. And then you have to sort of let go of like a take that you thought was pretty awesome. So, but yeah, then I have to go back and be like, okay, what are the lyrics? Like, what are the final lyrics? You know,
I think that's common for a lot of singers that they kind of do things like more or less down to the wire because they're still hearing like the nuances of language. And it's like, oh, you can replace that word with this word. This one's going to be more, have more power to it.
For sure. Yeah. And I feel like it's funny because it's also like a weird burden where like I'm not even a musician. I'm not even a full-time vocalist, right? Like this is not my day job. And these guys are really good and they put in their 10,000 hours and they have to buy instruments and change strings and think of riffs and come up with something out of nothing. And then it's like they hand it to me and I sort of make it whatever song it is. Like I make it whatever the title is and whatever people are going to maybe recognize about. And so that can feel like a burden if you let it, you know? And I do sweat every, like I try not to second guess myself. This is the age thing, right? When you're in your 20s and you're doing music, you're like, fuck the world, fuck everybody. I'm smart. You're dumb, right? And the older you get, the more you're like, maybe I'm not so smart. Even though everything we yelled about back then is worse than we said it was. Like we've all, I think the scene I come from feels like Nostradamus. That we're like, since Reagan, we've all been going, since the dead Kennedys, everything is as bad or worse than predicted. But the older you get, the more, I'm a grown up now. And it's like, why the fuck didn't I help fix things? You know, like, so that goes into it more, and there's a little bit more self-criticism, but you also want to say things with conviction. But I do have really strong convictions, so I don't know. It's more of a mind fuck trying to write as you get older. For me, anyway.
I want to come back to what you just said, but also that thing about that burden of like I don't know. I'm a words person, so that's the first thing that I hear or the first thing I go to when I get an album. I go to the lyric sheet or I focus on the lyrics. Yeah. So, yeah, it really is for a lot of people is what they most identify with.
Yeah, and it's where, like, it's funny because there's bands I like, and I won't name names, where it's like, I really like the band, but I don't think they, I don't think they're fucked up enough. Like, I don't think the singer like is like tortured enough for me to be in. Like, I like, and like, I feel like Nirvana checks that box, right? Like, there's a bunch of wannabes from that era. And the reason Nirvana worked for me is because I could tell Kurt was just swimming in some version of tragedy and self-expression. And like, it was all to the bone. You know, he's like in his bones coming out. It wasn't this fabrication. Yeah, so I look for that, right? And I feel like I can sniff it out. And it doesn't have to, not everything has to be like what I do, obviously. You know, like I can be listening to Radiohead or whatever, you know? And to me, I'm like, but I do, you know, or Fugazi or something that sounds nothing like us. Like Rites of Spring just bled onto the page, right? Like, and you know, I don't listen to any other bands that sound like Rites of Spring, but Rites of Spring is like that kind of thing. So I'm the same way. And I, growing up, it would be like, we'd get demos and you'd like be reading these lyric sheets with like 2-point type and like, you know, really trying to, I remember when I got, you know, the Embrace demo, you know, and like, was like geeking out over the words. Like, yeah. And so that's just how, that's how I came up. And I feel surprised when people aren't into that. Like, I just feel like you come from two different places if you're not trying to latch onto the lyrics of a band and figure out what they're sort of about and that kind of thing.
Yeah, the conviction thing is huge. I remember having a argument with a friend of mine over some folk album that I loved, and he didn't like it. But he said, at least this guy believes in what he's singing.
I mean, it's funny because, like, I've been listening to Masters of War by Bob Dylan lately. Because those fucking lyrics could have been written today. I kind of want to cover it, but that's a whole other thing. You know what I mean? But I'm like, that's, I don't know. There's like, that's just what drives me. Right? It's not the sound as much. Like, to me, something can be super heavy if like the lyrics just bring you there.
Well, this idea you were talking about, you know, being young and seeing how things were in the world and that, you know, kind of how little has changed. There's a weird thing I think that happens. Like, I expected, I think in my 20s, I'm like, okay, at some point I'm not going to be this angry anymore. And then I hit right. Like 42 and I was like, why am I pissed off?
I mean, also, I have 3 kids. They're all in their 20s now. I think the first president they were aware of is Obama, right? So they grew up in a world where there's a black president and he's an intelligent person, whether, you know, and I agree with most of his politics. He's not as progressive as me, but, you know, I don't think anybody becomes president could be. And then the sucker punch of Trump following that. Like, so it was almost like we were dangled this carrot of like, we might be going somewhere cool. And whether you love Hillary or hate Hillary, we might have followed a black president with a female president. Like, there's all this, like, you know, and it's almost like you let your guard down. And it's not like I don't think corporate Democrats are shitty or, you know, like, whatever, you know, but it's like, you can feel generally good that the, you know, the downtrodden had a chance at least to have a voice a little bit. Like, things are just incrementally, like, there are cultural things that, like, that do benefit from who's at the top of the fucking government, sadly. Because now Trump's given a permission slip for all the scumbags to stand out in the light and act like, you know, they represent everybody. So there's that frustration, I think, right? There's the, and for me, part of it is like, in your 20s, it's more like, this is the stage of discovery, and you're like, fuck. What the fuck, right? And I'm like finishing college and all that's offered to me now is caring about your bank account and doing some fucking job for the month. You know what I mean? And it's like, this is what we came up with as society. Congratulations. Work so you can shop. Like, that's what we came up with. And buy more and more shit because that's the only thing that keeps this going is to make a ton of useless shit and just keep selling it to you. And like, so there's that sort of discovery and like angst of heading towards that. And now I've been mired in it for decades. You know what I mean? It's like, so there's a difference there, right? Now it's more like you're like a weary warrior, right? Because like now you've just been in it. And if the older you get, the sort of the less of your peers, I think, are trying to fight the good fight. And like now they care about their fucking car or their 401k or their golf game or, you know what I mean? Like people just get sort of less interesting, or you find yourself in more lame social situations, like where people don't really know you, right? Like, so you're not, in your 20s, people know who you are, you. And the older you get, the more you're meeting people who are like, hey, nice to meet you. And it's the facade gets thicker in a way. So that to me is the difference between then and now. Not even that you asked that question, but I guess you did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's so interesting to me because I was having a conversation yesterday with a colleague here, and, you know, we were just talking about the, you know, kind of the weirdness of all this generational stuff, like, you know, Gen Z and whatever. And he's like, well, I'm a millennial. And he pointed at me and he's like, you're Gen X. And he's like, I feel like you guys were the last ones who had any sort of real mobility financially and socially, but you just didn't give a shit. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of true.
Yeah, we were the last one. I mean, I feel, and I don't think in terms of these generations, because I don't know. I don't like to put people in those buckets. It's too easy. It's like asking someone what their sign is. But we did grow up in an age where we weren't, first of all, we weren't sort of bogged down by all this social algorithm construct, right? So you're free to just fuck around, like just go disappear and find your tribe. And it wasn't like being documented for the whole world to second guess every microsecond, and you could make mistakes and you weren't nailed to the wall for them for the rest of your life. And, you know, people weren't trying to dig dirt on you all the time or bully you on your phone. Like, so there was a, you know, there's a beautiful analog aspect to Gen X that I think we might be the last ones that benefited from that. And you could afford to buy a house if you had a regular job. Like you could sort of dream of like normal things, right? Like, and now, like I get with my kids, I'm like, I don't know how they're gonna buy anything ever like that. Like it's crazy. So yeah, but I think we also didn't really care about any of that shit, right? We were like perpetual youth. But I think that's smart. I like that take. And what's your point? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, like, I have a neighbor who, you know, was a partner at a firm and had the, you know, retirement plan and the whole thing and the house and down south by the water and all. And he just dropped in. He just died in bed one day. Right. So all this stuff people are planning for and all this, like, I don't know, all this more carrot dangling about the American dream or retirement's going to be this magical thing. Retirement, you're fucking broken by then physically. So it's like, I don't know, a dream. I don't know. So I feel Gen X did, if anything, we were sort of present. We were sort of in the moment. Not that like everybody still is, but I do think it was a cool time, I thought.
I wonder, you know, if this sense of like being present and just like, I'm not worried about the 401k. I'm not worried about that. Is like some of this energy, like I hear in this music, where it's like, okay, we get to do this.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because like with Dead Guy, it's like some of Dead Guy are really financially more than fine and no happier, right, than people who are not so financially. And we all still feel drawn to like just do yeah, like all that stuff is just stupid. We get to do this? Are you kidding? Like, and people will go to the shows and like, yeah, and like it's. I mean, it's been amazing to just and to reconnect with the whole music scene because there are a lot of people who never left. I definitely left and came back. Yeah, now we more. Especially Dead Guy, because we've gotten to travel and stuff. We are like, just like, who knows how long this is going to last? And it's a total gift, and we totally appreciate it. And I feel a different connection to the audience. Like when Dead Guy came up, I was mad at the whole music scene that I came from because it was like just, Everybody wanted to get signed. Everybody wanted to be cool. Everybody was sort of predictable. Everything felt safe. And so we were sort of a reaction to that. And now, like, I tap into a lot of the same fuck them. And I do believe there is a them, right? Like, and that's being proved out in real time with everything. There's a them pulling the strings, all the fucking billionaires and the Epstein class. It's not, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but there's a power structure that uses all these things, like religion and everything else, as just levers. But Dead Guy 1.0 was more like trying to wake up the scene and write from a meaningful place, whatever that meant. Like, I just gave myself permission to write about anything. Like, this could be my journal, right? And I'm just going to share it because I'm sharing it with that person in the room who feels crazy because they don't understand the world. And we're not crazy. We're just not represented. So, and it's okay. Anger is normal. Frustration is normal. Sadness is normal. We tend to hide from it, right? So I wanted to just dive into that. And now I'm feeling like a connection with the audience in a different way where it's like we're all in this together, where it used to be like us against all, even the other bands, fuck everything. We were just like, right? And now I'm like, oh, if you're here in this fucked up world and this is what you chose to do, one of the few things that's like free of all the shit and looks like it did 30 years ago, good for you. Like, this is real. This is the only, like, so that's been a shift.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like, I didn't, like, where I grew up, it was so, like, rural. Like, there was no such thing as punk rock. It was, you know, Triumph and Kiss. And that's what, and so I was, like, in my 30s, like, when I started going to DIY shows, because I was covering them. And I met all of these kids who, some of them were in bands and stuff, but I've been able to see them, you know, over like 20 years, and they're not necessarily playing music, but they're like cooks or they're photographers or something. But that whole scene was all about, more than anything, it was like carve your own path. And like, to a person, those kids that I remember, that's what they've done.
Yeah, it's funny because I've talked about that with other people where it's like, if you dabble in the corporate worlds, which a lot of us have, there's a weird fiefdom to that we don't, I can sit in a room with a CEO and it doesn't feel like anything to me. It's just a dude or a woman, right? And it's just a title and it's just whatever, right? And so it doesn't faze me I never worked for these companies. Like I might contracted to do stuff as a designer or brand person or something. But I see people who are in that sort of, and the way they talk about the CEO, like, you know, like they're like sort of like special and different, like to be revered. And I'm like, they're probably just lucky and privileged. Like so many of them are not particularly smart. They often are sort of sociopathic, like capitalism sort of built to sort of benefit people who don't have the same sort of moral quandaries as regular people. So they make these cutthroat decisions and they can be very narcissistic and not second guess themselves. And it's a weird quality that succeeds in that world. And I think those of us who came from the sort of DIY scene can't relate to that structure where someone's down here and they have to report to this person here, and they're afraid to say something to this person over here. And people know their place, you know what I mean? Like all that kind of shit. Yeah, I think for better or worse, you get wired to just not fit with that. And then so you have to be some sort of entrepreneur, you're better off trying to be your own boss, basically.
You know, we've been talking about this, you know, like getting older and still feeling angry. And, you know, you talked about this idea of them. And there's something that's very funny. Because I remember my parents kind of talking about that to me. And they were born pre-World War II. And they were telling me that. And I'm like, you're paranoid. Those rich people aren't really like that. And now, you know, I've come to that point in my life where I'm like, holy shit, my parents were right.
It still shocks me that people can be such utter scumbags and they're in positions of power. Like, they're making these decisions that literally kill people. And they don't, and then they barely give it a thought. Like, it's insane. And I'm just glad that I'm still able to be a little bit shocked by it. You know what I mean? Like, there's a, I mean, but part of it too, though, is like my parents, my mom was born in 1931 in Germany, my father, 1930 in Holland. So think about their youth, right? Their teenage years, like the shit they saw, the stories my father had. Yeah. So it's like that kind of, you know, that's a real firsthand telling of how fucking shitty. And then it's like, if you know any black people, they're descendants of slaves. And it's easy to just gloss that over after a while, like, because it's the history books. But you really realize, like, there's, like, people who are, like, literally, like, I could talk to my neighbor across the street about their parents, you know, and their grandparents. And, you know, you're just like, and slavery, what the fuck, right? So it's like, I'm just surprised how many people just sort of still just go about their day. So I seek out, and it's not that I want to wallow in this, but it's like, I seek out people who you can at least communicate with. Like, I try to be unfiltered. Like, I'm like, life's too short. Like, to be like, I'm just going to, we're not going to talk about anything. I'm not going to make fun of your religion. I'm not going to talk about the government. Then like, all you're left with is like small talk, I guess. Right. So I don't know. And like, now it's like, you know, I'm 57 and I'm like, none of this shit's going to get solved in my lifetime. Like, and so you resign to that, right? And there's another sort of weird anger attached to that because I have kids, right? And I wish things would be looking better for them instead of worse. But we, right now, we're just only taking steps back as far as I can see. Pick a topic. We're only, maybe multiculturalism is better. It's definitely, the music scene's better, right? So I can look at that, right? You can sort of focus on your little world. And one of the things that brings me joy is like, the music scene is way more diverse and welcoming than it was when I was in it the first time. Like, when I look around and the types of people I see, whether we're talking about sexual orientation, race, gender, like, it's that the tent has opened up. Right, age. So that gives me some, that makes, basically I'm like, music's the only thing that's good. It's like, it's almost what I conclude.
You've been listening to a conversation with Tim Singer of Dead Guy and Bitter Branches. The new Bitter Branches album, Let's Give the Land Back to the Animals, is out now. You can learn more about Bitter Branches via their Instagram page and the official Equal Vision website, equalvision.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us questions and comments at info@kmuw.org, and to find out all the latest programming information there as well. Before we leave, we always like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.